Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health here in Toronto. Cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, compassionate facility. Right now, it is Mental Health Awareness Week. This is the time when they need you most. This is the time when you can make a real difference when it comes to doing something about the mental health crisis and the devastating opioid epidemic, the overdose epidemic that we're currently experiencing, losing 20 people every day. They need your help. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand. To help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
At the White House, but I'll tell you how I feel. The food is simply terrible, just sauerkraut and veal. If Mrs. R would stay at home, I'd get a decent meal. But that's off the record.
I'm so sorry, that's off the record.
All right,
that
then.
Was off the record.
This is off the record.
That's off the record, by the way.
This is off the record, off the record.
Remember, dear readers, you heard it here first. Off the record, on the QT, and very hush, hush.
Off the record? There's no such thing as off the record. No such thing in law. You cannot sue or have a journalist charged for publishing information that you gave to them in confidence. And there's no such thing in the official and binding formal rulebook that governs the profession of journalism, because no such rulebook exists. So off the record does not exist. And yet, it's very real. The use, abuse, and misunderstanding of off the record played a pivotal role in global affairs last week when off the record comments made by the American president, Donald Trump, to Bloomberg News journalists were published in the Toronto Star by reporter Daniel Dale. Trump told Bloomberg he had Canada over a barrel in NAFTA talks and that we were about to take a deal on his terms. When his boast went public, the talks stalled, and so they remain. It happened again last week when Tesla CEO Elon Musk sent an email marked off the record to a BuzzFeed News reporter, in which he viciously attacked this British diver, calling the guy a pedophile with no evidence whatsoever, after having already apologized for calling him that at an earlier point. Now, whether this incident will contribute to the implosion of Tesla, thus derailing humanity's technological savior, or merely complicate Musk's relationship with Grimes, remains to be seen. Add to all of this the New York Times opinion section, publishing an anonymous editorial by a senior Trump official who says that they are working from within to frustrate and thwart the U.S. president. And you have a world suddenly dumped into J school. explainer articles are popping up, laying out the difference between an anonymous source and a confidential source, the difference between on the record, on background, on deep background, not for attribution, embargoed. And while those definitions are useful to an extent, it all gets a bit silly when you realize, A, every news organization has its own version of these terms and its own rule book, or none, for how to use them, and B, in practice, the exact rules and definitions are often, maybe even usually, unknown, not just to the people giving information to reporters, but to the reporters themselves. And finally, C, even if you follow the rules, it is easy to manipulate and subvert them. So it's all about as clear as mud. Look, all of this will be a lot easier to talk about with reference to specific examples. So let's do that. Today, I'm going to talk to Toronto Star reporter Daniel Dale about his Trump bombshell and to BuzzFeed News editor-in-chief Ben Smith about their Elon Musk expose, as well as Smith's own history publishing embargoed press releases and off-the-record comments from Uber. Both of my guests are currently getting blasted online from Trump and Musk themselves to their hordes of supporters for supposedly breaking the sacred trust that is off the record. But did they? Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Alana Ravitsky, Alicia Mutual, Jamie Hall, Vicky Lynn Cove, Michael McLaughlin, Russell Spears, Colin Bird, and John Wimberly.
I'm John Wimberly in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I support Canada Land because media criticism is more important now than maybe ever. And it's all the better when it's delivered with a bit of caustic humor.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Daniel, is it possible for me to ask you to summarize what happened in the first place?
Sure. So the president sat down for an interview on Thursday with two Bloomberg News reporters and the editor-in-chief of Bloomberg News, and he made significant off-the-record comments about Canada, and he said he couldn't say this publicly because he correctly noted that it would make it much harder for the Canadian side to make a deal with him if they knew that he was not compromising. And I obtained those from a source who was not any of those three Bloomberg journalists who was in the room and made that promise to him. And it did affect the negotiations the day that I reported this. The Canadian side, after I brought these comments to them, raised them with the U.S. side in their NAFTA meeting. And I don't know exactly what happened, but I know that it was a significant factor in their failure to meet Trump's Friday deadline for reaching some sort of deal.
I think that the reason why we're talking about this today is that you sort of brought to public scrutiny this very nerdy journalistic question of what off the record is, what it means. If you had to kind of tell, you know, somebody outside of the business what off the record actually is, what would you say?
Sure. So off the record means that you cannot use the material in any way. So the default for an interview is on the record, and that's, everyone knows, you know, the person is talking and you're gonna print it or you're gonna air it. Somewhere in between off the record and on the record is on background, which means that you can publish the comments but would not attribute to them by name. You might say, you know, a senior government official, for example. But off the record is, this is off limits. It's not going anywhere at all. So with these comments that I got, Bloomberg had interviewed Trump and agreed that these particular remarks would be off the record. But I made no such agreement. I was not in this interview. I made no promises to the president. So when I independently obtained these quotes, I didn't feel bound by their promises, and I felt okay to publish.
Now, I want to just scrutinize one aspect of this that I haven't heard anyone question. Off the record must be negotiated. Would you agree? It's not enough for a source to say, by the way, off the record, I murdered a guy last night.
Right.
And then expect the journalist to keep that off the record.
Right.
The journalist has to have opportunity to agree, yes, I will receive this information and I won't use it. I mean, that I'm right about that understanding?
You're absolutely right. And I had an example of that with the White House trying to respond to these comments that I obtained. They sent me an email saying, off the record, such and such. It was nothing important. But that's not how it works. You know, you can't just send someone an email and say off the record. And that happens sometimes in practice because journalists may have a personal relationship with the source, and there may be an understanding developed over time that there's sort of a de facto blanket. You know, whenever I say off the record, I trust you that it's going to be off the record. But that shouldn't be how it works. And especially where there's no existing relationship, like between me and the White House spokespeople, that's definitely not how it works.
Yeah. My question is for Bloomberg's behavior, because they're backing up, you know, Trump is saying, hey, we had an off the record agreement. And they're saying, yeah, we had that agreement. I'm just wondering if that negotiation ever took place, because for the president to ask a journalist, this is going to be off the record, you would hope that the journalist's follow-up conversation question would be, well, I'm sorry, Mr. President, but before I can agree to that, I need to know what this concerns, because there's all kinds of things that a president might say to a journalist that a journalist would not be able to keep off the record. By the transcripts that were provided, it seems like Trump was just flipping a switch and unilaterally said, hey, this next thing about Canada, it's off the record.
He was, I could tell. And so I don't know what the ground rules they set going in were. So I don't know if there was a conversation, for example, where the president said, look, I'm going to flip on on the record to off the record. And if I say anything that's off the record, you have to agree that that's off the record. And did Bloomberg say yes to something like that? I don't know. But to me, it is an odd situation. Like, judging from the transcript, this is the most powerful person in the world who seemed to be unilaterally declaring things off the record without specific agreement on each one. I think that there should be a conversation about whether that's a good decision by the journalist interviewing him or whether that's appropriate at all.
I'm going to suggest that they would never in a million years say, Mr. President, you can go off the record whenever you want. I'm going to suggest that that was the de facto understanding between them, and that it is something that they honored, because if they ever burned him, they would lose access completely. And I would further suggest that this is not best practice.
That's possible. I think what they were doing may well not have been best practice, but I don't know what their understanding was. So I wouldn't feel comfortable venturing an opinion either way.
Are there circumstances, Daniel, under which you would break an off-the-record agreement? I understand this is not a circumstance where you had any obligation to keep the information you received off the record, but there are circumstances where journalists feel like it is ethical to break that understanding.
Yeah.
What would those be for you?
For me, your semi-comedic example was, you know, off the record, I murdered someone last night. Even if I promised the person I was going to be off the record, you know, if they're confessing to a crime, which could happen, you know, it might not be murder, it might be, you know, some sort of offense. You know, I might feel a moral obligation to report that to the authorities, depending on what it was. Also, if the source was lying to me and it was clear that it was on purpose, there are times when sources lie to you. And if it was clear that I was being manipulated by the source who was using off the record to play some game, I think I would give serious thought to burning them and to violating the agreement, because they would have violated the spirit of it.
Now, here's a question for you. You did accept this information with some version of off the record in the confidentiality. Whoever gave you this leak, you offered them confidentiality, correct?
Yes.
Now, if that source were to then publicly blame someone else for leaking the information, would that be a violation of that agreement? For example, it has been suggested that your source on this was President Trump himself, and then he went on to blame Bloomberg for breaking off the record when he's the one who leaked this to you. If he did that, he would arguably be in bad faith with you and not just with Bloomberg, in which case, am I going down a crazy rabbit hole here? No, can you just say unilaterally, was Trump your source on this?
It's not a crazy rabbit hole, but I'm going to have to be cagey and not directly responsive on this, because I just don't want to get into this game of saying who it was and wasn't, except to say that Trump is wrong when he said that it was the Bloomberg reporters. You know, I made a sort of unusual decision to not identify the source, but to say who it wasn't, because I think Trump, was using the information that I obtained to try to besmirch the reputation of people who had nothing to do with it. And so I can say it wasn't them. Anyone who promised him that it would be off the record did not violate their promise.
You know, I'm not going to ask you to go further than that, but I am going to point out that people have criticized you, or at least they followed up with you to say, Daniel, that's very specific wording you're using there.
Yeah.
You're not saying Bloomberg didn't leak it. You're saying that those specific reporters, and I believe you also said their editor, they didn't leak it. Nobody promised him off the record leaked it, which leaves open the possibility that somebody else at Bloomberg, which, you know, we're talking about bad faith on the part of the source, but there's also a possibility of bad faith on the part of journalists, like, oh, I promised the president off the record, but I'm going to give this to my colleague. He's going to leak it to Daniel Dale, and then my hands are clean.
I completely understand what you're saying. It just, like, you know, it's weird for me to be in a position where I feel like a politician, where I am not just, you know, answering the question straight up, but just in the interest of protecting the source, I have to be cagey. I have to let people offer absurd theories of various kinds about who it was and why they did it. But I just can't say either way.
I hear you. Either you're being just super, super solid about not engaging in this kind of guessing game, or you're unable to exclude President Trump himself for other reasons. And it would go against my promise to you in asking you for this interview to inquire any further about that. So let's just leave that.
Thanks, Jesse.
Daniel, anything else you want to say about this controversy that you've brought up, everyone suddenly this kind of journalism school question of off the record. I mean, I'm sure as you observe this debate, it's with some opinion and some comment about what everybody's saying. Anything you want to share?
Yeah, I'll say a couple of things. One is that this type of story in which someone believes they are off the record, but then another outlet that is not party to the off the record agreement reports it, is done all the time in Washington. So this is unusual with Trump and a Trump interview. But for example, there are lots of, you know, like an off the record salon with a newsmaker where, you know, Peter Baker at the New York Times, a great reporter, is known for this. He will obtain interesting information from those sessions and report it. So this happens. Also say that I think we should be more cautious and sparing in our use of on the record, especially with the president of the United States. I think you can make an argument that he should never be off the record. You know, everything he says is newsworthy. If he doesn't want to say something to the public, then he shouldn't say it at all. And also just say, you know, just sort of my advocating for my own story. I think, you know, what's most important here is the substance of the story. And I think it's in Trump's interest to make this a media ethics debate. And I think it's a good media ethics debate, and I'm glad you're asking about it. But I think we shouldn't get lost in all this and forget what his actual comments were, which I think is what's most significant here.
Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Can you give me like a quick synopsis of why Elon Musk is so angry with you?
Well, our reporter Ryan Mack has been reporting on this, on Musk's attacks on this cave diver who helped rescue kids in Thailand, but then who, I guess, made the mistake of diminishing Musk's role in that rescue because the submarine he designed wasn't ultimately used, and he had eventually apologized for attacking this diver. He then renewed his attacks in this email, told Ryan that the diver was married to a 12-year-old, that he'd been kicked off the rescue. We reported hard on these allegations, could find no evidence of them at all. We then printed Musk's email, which he had written the words at the top of the email off the record, but we had never talked to us about whether it was on or off the record, so we printed his email. And I think he was also upset about that.
He may have maligned somebody without any evidence for being a pedophile, but you broke off the record, or did you not?
There are a lot of ambiguous things in journalism and how people use terms like on background in particular. It's actually not ambiguous what off the record is, and anybody certainly who talks to journalists all the time, as Elon Musk has for a long time, knows that it is a contract between a reporter and another person, and you say, Jesse, can I make this part of the recording off the record? And if you say no, I can't. It is not magic like saying Beetlejuice three times.
You know, I wanted to talk with you about this because, of course, Trump similarly sort of asserted without that negotiation that's supposed to take place, can I give you some information off the record? The journalist then has to make a decision as to whether or not they can allow the person to go off the record. That didn't happen with Trump either. And Trump knows a thing or two about speaking to the media, as you say, Elon Musk does. And then I also remember that you had conflict with the CEO of Uber when you were invited to a dinner party where some other people had maybe agreed to the party being off the record, but you certainly didn't. And he shared information with you that you then, of course, you're a reporter, you published it. The common thread in these three cases, I don't know that it's these three people are media illiterate. The common thread to me is that they're all powerful, arrogant men. And they're the type of people who journalists want to have access to. Do you think that there's anything to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the fundamental thing here, and the guy who thought he was off the record talking to me was an aide to the Uber CEO, a guy named Emil Michael. I mean, I think in a way what these things have in common is that people in power often assume, often correctly, that reporters are on their side and that reporters kind of will do what they say.
You, in discussing that report where Uber thought it was off the record and you ran it, you said it so often is not an ethical decision because the ethics are pretty clear. If you didn't agree to off the record, then you're not bound. Your responsibility is to your reader. It's a tactical decision as to whether or not you could afford to burn this person because you're never getting access again.
I mean, that's always part of it, right? I mean, there's tactical and there are other kinds of, I think, ethical decisions involved. When you're talking to somebody who's really totally unsophisticated about journalism, I do think that often reporters ought to make sure that they make sure that person understands the situation they're in talking to a journalist. I think in the U.S. at least, there are a lot of, the law gives us a lot of leeway to write about people's personal lives. Like, I think there are a lot of times when, particularly with people who don't have power, who aren't sophisticated about the media, that you're not obliged to print every word that you can print. I think when you're talking to powerful people, in this case, a powerful person who's waging a really intense personal campaign against a private citizen, your obligation is to share that with your audience.
And it's a good enough story that it's worth pissing off Elon Musk as well. I mean, you know, we do weigh these things, right?
Oh, sure. Right. And I think, you know, I mean, that's always part of it. I mean, I also think that I hope that, you know, Mr. Musk will, when he calms down and I understand why he's upset, realize that we did the only thing we could do here, that he made a mistake. And I, you know, I look forward to talking to him again.
You know, you bring up kind of like a best practices thing when you're talking to naive people or people who don't know the ins and outs of this, and people here are, you know,
and again, like, that's not true in every case, right? If you're talking to a vicious warlord who happens not to know the ins and outs, you might allow him to tell you about murders he's committed without informing him the ins and outs. This is a complicated business. It's not, these obligations aren't, you know,
right.
There are a lot of case by case decisions to be made.
In terms of your media literacy, dictator, you are naive and innocent, but in terms of your genocidal practices, I'm not going to cut you any slack. I think what you're proving here is that there is no like mathematical, scientific, or, you know, the professional code of conduct varies from news organization to news organization, and the morality of each individual reporter comes into play. You said something that I thought is very, very honest and true. In an earlier interview, you said there's an element of journalism that is fundamentally about betrayal. And we can kind of like talk to the J school profs about how, you know, best practice is to let them know I'm turning the recorder on. We are on the record. Here's who I am. Here's where I'm from. But we know that day to day reporters want information nobody else has. It's not like you're trying to trick anyone, but you are trying to build intimacy. You're trying to get people to share things they haven't shared with anyone else. I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, like, and whether there's anything wrong with it or not, I'm not sure it's separable from the job.
I mean, I think, right. I mean, I do think, again, it's a question of whose side are you on? Are you on the side of the people you're writing about, or are you on the side of your audience? You know, the job is fundamentally to serve the audience, which often means printing things people don't want printed.
You know, it's funny because I have felt the same way, and you can feel kind of tough, and you can feel also kind of virtuous, and like, I'm here for the reader. I'm not here to make friends. And yet you turn it on the other side, and you think that the reader would be very happy with us and love us for that. And they don't. These are the types of stories that, even though Elon Musk is maligning this poor guy who saved these kids and calling him a pedophile with no evidence, it sort of feeds into this hatred of the press, that the press is scummy and that people, poor Elon Musk trusted you guys and look what you did to him. There's a lot of people saying that online. Like, we're in a kind of a unique moment of everybody, you know, can agree on one thing, which is that we're a bunch of scumbags. Like,
yeah, you know, I think I think about that a lot. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes you'll hear journalists say, if only people could really see inside our work and see everything we do, they'd like us more. And I think there are elements of that that are definitely true. But also, I do not think that every single thing that great journalists have done to get great stories is something that is always easy to understand. And there are trade-offs. And certainly, there are these choices you make that are not necessarily about making people like you. Like, I think that, you know, the choice is what Musk said an important thing to know about a powerful person? The choice isn't, will people like me if I print this? There's a great exchange. Michael Hastings, this incredible journalist who worked for us in 2012 and 13 and died in 2013, he was doing a Rolling Stone profile on General Stan McChrystal that they later said they meant it things to be off the record that were that Michael used, but it had a huge impact both on McChrystal and on the conduct of the American war in Afghanistan. But Michael got into this exchange with a Hillary Clinton spokesman, Philippe Reines, and, you know, a fairly heated exchange in which I thought Reines looked over-aggressive in a way that revealed something about Clinton's operation that was really telling. And Michael really agreed and wanted to print it. And I said to him, you know, if we print this, you do look like an asshole here, and people are going to think you're an asshole. And Michael said, well, everybody knows I'm an asshole. The news is that he's an asshole. So, you know,
I like it. Like, I like the decision to run. Then I like that sense of sacrifice. And yet it's funny, like, when those things come out, you would hope that the reader is just like, I don't care about the reporter. I care about the story. But so many things are kind of staged like they're like, you know, wrestling matches now. And whoever looks like the villain, you know, that seems to actually matter more than OK, you did what you had to do and you got me the information. You know, like, you have been very much on the inside of this. I mean, like, you are a guy who has advocated for aggressive reporting. You run your newsroom with the philosophy that reporters should not be looking to make friends. I don't know. It feels like, are you reacting to the hatred of the press? Are you reacting to what's changed? Is it possible to be any other way? And now that we are, whether we like it or not, part of the game as a useful prop to kick around, to use as the public enemy. Why do they hate us, and can we do anything about that? Or is there no way to report the news without absorbing that and being hated?
No, I think that is a great question and something that I think about a lot. And I think, you know, sometimes I definitely, as somebody who came up in print and on the web, look at television journalists preening and sort of playing the part of a journalist in this very theatrical way. I'm irked by that. At the same time, I think reporters, for instance, have to realize that the emails that they send to sources are pretty likely to become part of the story, and have to think about how their own correspondence, their own conduct will look in a way that is new and is just a matter of reality, whether you like it or not. And I do think that is a kind of new constraint. And I guess I would just add one thing to that, which is I think that, you know, part of it is, if, you know, if you were covering these lead poisonings in public housing in New York City, and as part of that, you sent an email to a city official that was straightforward and honest, but perhaps didn't give the, they were then surprised by how the story came out and caused them to admit something they didn't want to admit. I don't think anybody would say, you know, like, that's outrageous that you did that. But I think that, you know, there's a proportionality question. What are you going after? What are you trying to expose? And you have to be comfortable saying, well, what, you know, obviously, however I reported this story is justified by what we got here and the importance of the subject.
Yeah. I mean, every case has to be kind of adjudicated on its own merits. And we kind of want to maintain sole discretion to make those judgments, right?
Yeah, and I think that's honestly where the notion that there's something that is specifically called journalistic ethics as distinct from human ethics has always confused me. I mean, I think people expect us to behave ethically and make ethical choices the same as anybody else, but there's this desire for a special set of rules that it will be very simple and easy to follow for journalists, and I don't think that's ever really existed.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
That is your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about it, and I will read that email. Send it to jesse@canadalandshow.com. Our Twitter account is @CanadaLand. Our website is canadalandshow.com, where we publish original news stories all the time. Oppo returns this week. Justin and Jen have not argued all summer, so it is going to be an explosive episode where they're just basically going to emit loud, high-pitched noises at each other at sonic frequency for 30 minutes. It's going to be great. There might also be some politics discussed. Check it out. This episode is produced by Ali Graham. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, please support us by going to patreon.com/CanadaLand.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.